Last week, Barack Obama gave a major address on the U.S. economy. Terry Golway is the co-author of the new book, Fellow Citizens, the Penguin Book of U.S. Presidential Inaugural Addresses. We asked him, since Obama gave such a policy-heavy address last week, was it safe to assume that his inauguration speech won't be so wonkish?
In all honesty, I hope not. Because I do find that those speeches, and Lyndon Johnson gave one of those kinds of speeches in 1965, those speeches are not particularly memorable. They're suitable for the State of the Union, but I don't think appropriate for an inaugural address, no.
Terry, let me ask you this, and I know we're looking at the words itself and in your book about the addresses, but there's going to be something even more intense about next Tuesday, and that's, of course, the fact that although people have certainly grown to knowing and liking Barack Obama over the last couple of years he's been on the national scene, it's still going to be something historic next Tuesday, the sight of a black man taking the oath of office, which to some, who knows, may still be a shock. What about that next week?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, next January 20th, 2009, is a milestone in American history. I mean, it is something all of us who see it are going to remember. And hopefully President Obama will give a speech that we all remember, but in some ways it almost doesn't matter because we know this is an inauguration literally like no other in American history. And so therefore it is going to be riveting television. It's going to be riveting to be there. And the speech, to tell you the truth, the speech almost seems like an aside, doesn't it? Given the enormity of the situation, of the precedent that is being established here.
We're speaking with Terry Golway. He's the co-author of the new book, Fellow Citizens, the Penguin Book of U.S. Presidential Addresses. Now, there's certainly been memorable phrases from inauguration speeches, but as you write in the book, there have not been so many memorable inauguration speeches overall. Why is that?
Well, you know, I think it's hard to do. I think that many presidents, of course, they're involved in the transition into office. Some presidents, like Teddy Roosevelt, actually thought that the inaugural address was really just sort of an obligation. You know, he didn't really put very much time into it at all.
Well, Terry, I'm sorry to interrupt you there, but there have been a few, actually, that have been really short, have there not?
Yes, there have. In fact, President Washington, in his second term, gave a speech of about 135 words, and President Roosevelt, in his fourth inaugural address, which was in 1945, gave the second shortest. That was maybe 200 words. And, of course, President Roosevelt was very ill at the time and, in fact, had, a couple more months to live. So his was short. Richard Nixon, when he was about to give his first inaugural, went back and looked at other inaugurals, and he decided that shorter is better. And I think that that's probably pretty good advice for anyone who's about to give a speech.
Looking back at some of the speeches that I did over the weekend, Thomas Jefferson's first speech is considered to be one of the best ever. Can you remember, tell us why that was?
Yes, I can. I mean, frankly, to a 21st century reader, Jefferson's can go on. But remember, you know, back then speeches were longer because they didn't have radio and they didn't have television. So you went to a speech and you listened to somebody talk for 2 hours. Not our idea of entertainment, perhaps, but, you know, this was in 1801. But the importance of Jefferson's speech, in addition to the fact that it is this very philosophical document, is that it also takes place after the first real contested election in American history, that is the election of 1800, where Jefferson unseated John Adams. So you have a precedent there of a president losing re-election and the precedent of a political party, the Federalists, surrendering party power peacefully to the opposition party. So this was a true test of American democracy. And Jefferson recognized that, and of course the election of 1800 was probably the nastiest ever in American history, which is kind of hard to believe.
Indeed.
But it was. But he says, you know, on this day, we are all Federalists, we are all Republicans. In other words, this is a day to come together and celebrate what this country stands for. And every president since then has said that, including President Kennedy, if you remember, opens up by saying this is not a day for party, this is a day for freedom. So they're all echoing Jefferson's theme.
Speaking about disputed elections, as you did a moment ago, of course, our departing president, George W. Bush, has given two inauguration speeches. Interesting. I do remember the one, of course, in 2005. That's when he talked about really trying to democratize the rest of the world, basically. I don't remember at all the 2001 speech, which, of course, was under very controversial circumstances. This is a man who lost the popular vote by over 500,000 votes. And, of course, there was the dispute down here in Florida for 36 days. In that speech, Terry Galway, do you recall, did George Bush try to talk about bringing the country together at that point?
Yes, he did. He did that by acknowledging President Clinton and Vice President Gore, and as far as I know, and I'm going to have to go back and check this, but as far as I know, that is the only time where a new president has thanked not only his predecessor, that's been done, but also the outgoing vice president, who of course was the defeated candidate, or sort of defeated candidate in 2000. So I think that Bush, in his opening remarks, was trying to acknowledge the fact that he understood that this was a very bitter time and a very divisive election, and I think in that regard he was trying to unify the country. Now the rest of his speech, I have to be honest with you, is not particularly memorable.